You're listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. Joining us today, Dave Eisenstatter, editor with the Valley Advocate, and Natalia Munoz, host of Vaya con Munoz on WHMP. Dave, Natalia, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you
for inviting me.
This week, Massachusetts transportation officials unveiled a half dozen different options for expanded east-west rail service, that's passenger service, between the western part of the state and Boston. Track work alone is estimated at between $2 and nearly $25 billion, depending on the plan, with ridership somewhere between 36 and 800 a day. State Senator Eric Lesser says the passenger figures from MassDOT are too low.
They don't take into account the changes in what rail would bring both to Western Mass and, by the way, people in the Boston area commuting to Springfield and to Pittsfield, which is an option.
Dave, federal funding could help with the cost, but still, is this bad news for East-West rail supporters?
Well, I think a lot of the headlines have gone to the upper end of the upper estimates, the $25 billion. I think most of the other plans aren't anything close to that. I think East-West rail is important. It doesn't mean that we have to have the tip-top-of-the-line $25 billion thing, but I do think that that the East-West rail should extend all the way to Pittsfield. I think we're going to need all the advocates we can get East-West rail, and I think it's important to connect the two sides of the state together. I think that these costs, you know, don't look at that upper number. That's not the one that is probably going to be approved by the legislators anyway. Look at some of those other more reasonable plans, and let's get this done.
And as Dave mentioned, some of the plans actually would involve bus connections from Pittsfield to Springfield and then train service from there. Others would not. And some legislators at a meeting this week really said they were not in favor of anything having to do with bus with this proposal. Natalia, with a lot of talk about fixing the MBTA in Boston, do you see Governor Baker or state lawmakers going along with any of this?
Well, with enough pressure, they'll go along with anything. And I agree with Dave. We need a train that starts on the westernmost part of Massachusetts, going to the easternmost part of Massachusetts. And, you know, maybe that'll be our big dig. Boston had its big dig. Our region will have a big dig. And it's very important. I agree with Senator Lesser that those figures in terms of passengers are very, very low. I think a lot of more people would take the train every day to and from the different points along that line.
It's hard to count something that isn't there yet.
Yeah. And how did they get to $25 billion?
Meanwhile, after pressure from lawmakers, TD Bank has announced it will keep a Springfield branch open after all, but on a limited schedule. There are many complaints that closing it would force residents to travel several miles for a full-service bank. Mildred Mims lives near the Mason Square Bank and says she was upset when she found out about its proposed closure.
I was outraged because I was saying we up here, you know, in this neighborhood, ain't no banks around here. So it's good that they have it up here.
Natalia, do local officials need to stay on top of the situation and on top of similar banking deserts around or any that could develop?
Yes. Mason Square is already what's known as a food desert. And Stop and Shop and Big Y and River Valley Market that's opening in East Hampton, none of these people will consider Mason Square to put a supermarket. So now a bank is saying, oh, we're leaving. And then after pressure, they're saying, okay, we'll stay for a limited time only. It seems like a neighborhood that has 40,000 people living in it deserves a lot more. And yes, local officials need to pressure to keep those services and pressure to bring a full service supermarket to the neighborhood as well.
Dave, U.S. Senators Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren, as well as Congressman Richard Neal, all protested this move, and they're all in respective election campaigns right now as well. Is there any coincidence?
No. I mean, it starts with the community. I mean, when a big corporation makes a decision that affects your local community, if you're outspoken and you can get people who are decision makers on your side, things can happen. And I think that it's a real testament and tribute to the people in that neighborhood that they were able to get this, to get even this modest victory out of that banking corporation.
I wonder, where was Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey and Congressman Neal for the supermarkets? Because this is not just about a bank. This is actually about 40,000 people.
And speaking of elections, Tuesday is presidential primary day in New Hampshire. Of course, the Iowa caucuses ended up in chaos when a vote tabulation app failed. Dave, you wrote this week about being careful about election technology. Fill us in.
Well, I've been watching the Trump administration with growing horror with its immoral acts. And the Iowa caucus was supposed to be this big moment where we were going to choose someone to take on Trump and the Trump administration. And it devolved into utter chaos in part because of this untested phone app that seems to be hastily foisted on these volunteers and not vetted very well. The Iowa caucus in general had been under scrutiny about, you know, should this mostly white state with an antiquated voting system lead off? And I think the caucuses themselves, I hope that they don't happen anymore. I give a lot of credit to the Sanders campaign for instituting some reforms about releasing the actual vote totals and creating these satellite caucuses for people who can't show up at the caucus time. But it was not enough. The turnout was hugely depressed, and the results were just not there on election night.
Natalia, is it time for communities and states to go back to paper ballots?
Oh, I think that'd be great. Actually, yes. And people shouldn't take this as, oh, we should go back to, you know, carving numbers in stone. Just paper, just pencils, like Dave said. Let's get the count right. And the DNC's Tom Perez, he needs to go. He's overseeing chaos after chaos.
In the minute we have left, let's stay in New Hampshire. Of course, it's been the first primary for a very long time, generally in the presidential election cycle. Some believe that honor should be moved around or to a different group of states. Natalia, in about 20 seconds, tell us what you think.
I think that there should be caucuses across the country the same day. I don't think there should be just one state that gets to caucus first.
Caucuses or primaries?
Caucuses and primaries.
Dave?
Well, I'm from New Hampshire, so it's hard for me to say this, but I do think that it should be moved around and there should be more states that get to go first. I do think, though, that small states should get a chance to go first because that gives a chance for the candidates to really meet the voters and not have to go on TV and spend a bunch of money that way.
Natalia, smaller states go first?
That's fine if the smaller states go first, but then it could be Iowa has 3 million people. These are two mostly white states. So maybe to change the rules that candidates have to go to every single county in four different states and the primaries are celebrated that way or the caucuses are celebrated that way. I just don't think it should start with Iowa and it should not continue with New Hampshire.
All right. Natalia Munoz, host of Vaya con Munoz on WHMP, and Dave Eisenstatter with the Valley Advocate. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Shortlist and NEPR's Week in Review. You can also listen to us wherever you get your podcasts by going to nepr.net/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.